Welcome back to the Acting Podcast, a podcast for the real-life working screenwriter. I am Tasha Hugh.
And I am Josh Hallman.
And as a reminder, Act 2 is a network and support group for the everyday working screenwriter. This podcast is one of the things we do. We also have a Patreon. We also have live in-person networking events, or just, I don't like calling them networking events, events where we come and say hi to each other. So check us out on Patreon.
Can we just call them a party?
It's called a party. That tells you how many parties I go to. Oh, right. The party. So join us on our Patreon, Act 2 Writers on Patreon, and you will be sort of the first to get notified of any of our special events that we do. You also have access to bonus content, which is really cool. Josh and I are breaking this bonkers time travel spec, and we record that. We record every time we break it, and we're getting closer and closer to what this movie should be, and you get to see kind of what that process looks like of breaking a new story from scratch. We also do script clubs. We just started that last month, which was super fun, where we send out a script to our Patreon users that has either maybe sold in the industry, is a spec that just sold, or is a movie about to come out, or a movie that has come out, and we compare the script to what that movie was, and we all hop on a Zoom. Maybe at some point we'll do a real life one in person, but I know everyone is kind of scattered across the globe. Uh-huh. But we gather and we talk about the script and why it works as a writer. We break it down what the writing is, right? Not just do we like it or do we not, but what writing lessons are to be learned. And it's super fun. I learn something new every single time we do it. But if you don't want to do any of those things, maybe at least subscribe to the podcast. That way you get alerts when we have topics that are new and upcoming. You can also rate us, write a comment, or just email us. You can email us questions, topic suggestions at act2writers@gmail.com. or on our Instagram and Twitter at Act 2 Writers. I'm on Instagram at Story Thursday and Twitter at Tasha 3.0.
I'm Josh Hallman on Instagram, Joshua Hallman on Twitter. And Tasha, you're too nice. You're too kind. I feel like you're just giving people the option to like subscribe to the podcast and follow. Or you have to do it. Everyone listening, you go rate it. You follow along. Don't give these people an option, Tasha.
Or Josh comes to your door and kicks you.
No.
In the balls.
It is great, though. It helps us. It helps us. It is very appreciative.
Yes, agree. Well, we came into this thinking we've got, you know, a nice, simple topic to talk about. Easy. And now I feel like we have a lot to talk about because we have some This Week's in Writings on top of it.
Yeah.
So do you want to just get into This Week's in Writings?
This Week in Writing.
This Week in Writing.
All right, let's just start with our big announcement, which is not a big announcement. But we have a new logo that we're really proud of that we are going to be putting up, I guess, what is the word? Unveiling.
Unveiling.
This week on all of our socials and on our store. And I'm excited about it because the concept behind it is very much what this podcast is, right? Which is that this industry beats you up, but the only way to be successful and accomplish your dream is to just keep going, even when it beats you up.
Yeah.
And that was sort of the thinking behind our logo. And I'm just really excited about it.
I'm excited too. We're treating it like sometimes with at sports stadiums when these athletes retire and they're just Hall of Famers, they erect a statue in front of the stadium, and I feel like we are doing this. We're like unveiling.
Josh is like, "Why are you announcing our new logo?" Like, "Cause I love it."
I love it too. I love it too. I do. I really love it too. Cause a lot. I'm not. This is gonna sound silly, but a lot of thought did go into it.
A lot of thought did to it, guys. If you hate it, please do not tell us.
See, those little things.
It's like,
you know?
If I feed you cake and it's a little dry, just tell me you love the cake.
Yeah.
That's how it feels.
It's the little things. It's going to look so effortless that people won't even notice it, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know if that sounded good. Anyway, so that's that.
That's that. All right. What do you got?
For This Week in Writing? Okay.
Yeah?
I'm going to bring up our old friend, Dan Kunkka, because he had a thread recently on Twitter, and he started to talk about pitching. He went into a long thread, which I won't get into all of, but something that really stuck out to me was like, he essentially said you have to approach it as like a character. You it's a performance, and that's how you should be approaching it. And I agree with that, and I think we've talked about that before on the podcast, but it's worth mentioning again. And there's something interesting that he said, was that he would memorize and he would write out the first part, and it would be like the first 3 to 5 minutes, because that would get him in his groove. And then he would have other big moments that he would get figured out, like almost like tent poles throughout the pitch to kind of get him to move. And he also said he pitches towards to a page count, which I thought was like really interesting. So if you're in the pitch, he'd be like,
what does that mean?
Okay, so, you know, now in the script where, you know, this is about page 78 or 75, and it's our low point, and this is happening. So it almost creates that availability to follow along where you are in a script. Mm-hmm. And I feel like,
yeah,
we've talked about this, but that the importance to kind of paint that picture, and when you're pitching to somebody, so they know exactly where you are, because a lot of times you don't want someone being like, is this like, where are we? The first act, and you're like at the end of the third act in your pitch. So,
right. I've definitely been interrupted and people have said like, where are we at in the movie?
Yeah.
Oh, we're at this stage. So there are certain people who really do want those
markers.
I don't have words today.
No, that's neither do
a
I.
Problem,
it's
given
great.
We're doing a podcast. Yeah, they want those signposts, those markers along the way.
Yeah.
Yep. That's interesting. Yeah, I woke up and like read that thread this morning, and I do my pitching very differently. Like the fact that he has the confidence in himself to be able to just memorize the first section, mm-hmm. and then kind of wing it.
Yeah.
Is very impressive. I have the same problem as him, where the pitches I've bombed have been when I ramble. But I will ramble throughout the whole thing, because I get so nervous having to speak in front of people that I sort of black out a little bit. Like I forget what I'm talking about, where I'm going. And it's not even that I haven't practiced, because I practice like crazy leading up to the pitch, and I know every single beat of it. But all of that just completely disappears, goes to another realm when I sit in front of people. So to have the actual whole entire script in front of me is the only way that I've been able to get through it. And I actually have my first pitch in person in years because of the pandemic. And I'm very nervous, because I'm going to have an iPad in front of me, because that's what I would always do. And I have an iPad, yeah. And I sort of like move through. I even learned how to... in my pitch scripts, which I would always have in PDF, because I like going left to right instead of having to scroll down, because sometimes you accidentally scroll too far.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And like, oh, fuck, I lost my page. Oh, God. And then you're suddenly like doing, you know, back and forth trying to find your page. So a PDF, so I can go left to right. Very simple. But I also have these little markers along the way where I will capitalize words, so that when I'm nervous and I'm just glancing down at my script, those words stand out to me and remind me where I am in my script. And then I also break it into sections so that it's not just one long page of text, because if I do get lost, if I glance down and get lost, I know I'm still in this section, and I divide it by like having a line across the page, and that really helps me out. It's just all the tricks that I've learned to prevent the exact thing that Kunkka talks about in this Twitter thread, which is getting so nervous you just start fucking going off the rails.
Yeah. And the other thing with the iPad is, I feel like you also have to remember to turn off the sleep port. Like, you know how an iPad, if it just is dormant for too long, it just goes black? I've been in scenarios where I've needed an iPad and I've just been talking, and then it goes black, and you're like, shit, I have to use my finger or my face to unlock this thing. And you're like swiping up, and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. And then I've also had where the iPad just decided not to work in that moment. And you're like, it has never just been a black screen. Why is it just doing this? And so I learned to also print out your script for your pitch just in case it doesn't work out for whatever reason. But if this topic interests you, which I think it does because it fascinates me, and we have to do this in our business all the time, pitching, we have a series called Pitching is Terrible. Go back through it. I think we're probably due for another installment of our Pitching is Terrible series. But we have like 3 or 4 already out there about how to organize your pitches, how to even start a pitch, what is a pitch, all of that stuff, how to prevent going off the rails like Kunkka talks about. So go back, check those out, and we'll do more soon.
Boom. All right.
My next This Week in Writing is that I sent this email to you, that a producer sent out an email saying they were looking for male-driven rom-coms. And I thought that was very interesting, because I had never heard anyone mention like female driven rom-coms. Like rom-coms were just so, there was a category.
Yeah.
Male driven, female driven. Like I never thought of it that way. But then I thought male driven rom-com is so cool. Like, why don't we have more of those, where oftentimes rom-coms are like female wish fulfillment? But what about like male romantic wish fulfillment?
I don't even know where I don't want to talk about this.
Does it make you uncomfortable, George?
It doesn't make me uncomfortable. I just feel like I'm going to say something and it's going to sound like I'm, I don't know, insensitive or something. I don't know. I guess I don't fully understand what a male-driven rom-com is.
That concept, because you feel like a rom-com is like, it's for everybody.
Yeah, it's a rom-com. That's the appeal.
It's a rom-com.
To a rom-com, because we all have dealt with relationship issues, and maybe it's flipping the dynamic, but that's been done before in the sense of like, you know, obviously the cliche rom-com is like the old 90s stuff of like desperate women and things like that. But even that flipped. No, that's not even how, now I feel like it's always a two-hander now.
Yeah, I feel like it usually is. Yeah, because I just saw Anyone But You with Glenn Powell and
Sydney Sweeney. The fact that you just paused is clear that was a male-driven rom-com.
Well, it was the part that I paid attention to.
Hey, man, same.
So yeah, that was a two-hander. It was a movie for everybody, because, I mean, let's be honest, like Sydney Sweeney was super hot in that movie. And you think typically in like a female-driven rom-com, you really focus on the dude, which they did not. They focused on both. So that was a movie for everybody.
Okay. Do we get the producer on to find out exactly?
All right, well, I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah. All right. Just drop it out there. Okay, I'm going to move on.
Okay.
So something happened. We're writing a script together. Not the script that you mentioned at the top of the show. And we wrote this extensive outline that is amazing. And I've been following the outline. And then as I've been following it, which has been completely helpful, I did stop to wonder, am I following the outline too closely? Because there was parts of it where so what I've been doing is like, I'll write out the scene according to the outline. And it's still the outline. But there's like dialogue that we had written in the outline where I basically would just not copy and paste it, but just write a variation of that.
Yeah.
And so let me just start this by saying I didn't change anything in our script, but
you should though. Continue.
Cause you did a very good job about it. Cause I obviously read through your portion of it, your half of it. And then I was like, Tasha did like a really good job of like sticking to the outline, but not being too close to the outline. Like it didn't change the essence of the script or anything. But this is all to say that there's always this argument of like to outline or not to outline. Although I am very pro outline, there is an element where maybe you stay a little too close to it at times when you could kind of veer just slightly in a different direction and tweak a character. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was not going to talk about this, but I was breaking an episode of television this week. And what is interesting is that like by the time you know, you're done with your week of breaking your episode in a TV room, you have a board full of cards on the wall, on the board that are each scene and a card.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we talk about a lot when you break with index cards or magnetic cards on a whiteboard or something like that. Every act, the teaser, it's all broken down into scenes. And I know that from taking that blueprint, which is what we all agree on, into an outline, it's going to completely change.
Yeah.
Like where those scenes are is going to change. Like the essence of the scene will be the same. Like I still need to get from point A to point B in that scene the way we carded it. Otherwise, the scene doesn't function anymore. The episode doesn't function anymore. But the stuff I pitched in the room is going to probably change in order to put an outline together and writers know that, right? Like there was something in the room where it's like, oh, do you want to talk about this section and how we transition to this other scene? And I was like, no, I'll figure it out in the outline. And there's a sense of like, yeah, like once you feel your way through it, you'll feel the rhythm and the pacing of the script and the outline, and things will just change. And I think that's true from outline to script. We talk about that all the time. So if you feel like it needs to change, I think so long as the essence is the same, I feel like go for it.
Yeah. Now, when I say change, heart. I just mean minor tweaks, just minor things that.
Okay. Yeah. Follow your heart.
Follow your heart. But no, just for the record, I'm sticking to the heart. Freaking outline. Don't you worry, Tasha. Read it. You'll be like, what?
It's going to be a surprise when we get the second half of the movie in.
Yeah. Get ready. Anyway, so that's it.
All right. I watched Godzilla X Kong. So, I mean, was it Godzilla times Kong? I don't know. Yeah. How do you what that movie's called? Have you seen it?
I have.
You have?
I have.
Okay. I loved it.
Yeah.
I thought it was so fun. I really, really enjoyed it. But what I thought was interesting, it was a very interesting sort of writing exercise or writing lesson in the movie. Because all of the human characters in this movie were only there. Like, their lines were only things like, that pyramid has to do with gravity. If you they're pouring that liquid in that water so that it becomes a metal.
Yeah.
Don't go over there because that's dangerous. Like, they were just there to sort of, like, fill logic holes with really on-the-nose dialogue. I thought that was fascinating.
You know, I'm going to tell you the truth. I love this movie. If you right now opened a briefcase filled with $1 billion and said to me, tell me the plot of Godzilla Kong, I would be like, you can have the money if you tell me the plot. I would slide the briefcase back to you. But having said that, I loved this movie. So I was like rooting. I was like, yes, everything about it was perfect.
It was amazing. It was great.
Yeah.
That's all. I have nothing else to say.
No, the on the nose stuff. And okay, I'm going to just say this one last thing. Then we can get out of this week in writing.
Yeah.
I was watching Three Body Problem on Netflix and they had a moment where, and I'm not going to spoil anything. They had a moment where two characters were dropping just some heavy, heavy, like, information about just some, like, physics and this and that. It was very confusing. But they did it in a way, and we talked about this on a previous episode, they did it in a clever way because it was during karaoke. One of the guys hit on one of the women, and he was singing kind of a goofy song. So it was that thing where it was like they were dropping this really intense information while this guy's singing karaoke, kind of not, like, not distracting you, but enough to just kind of make you giggle, but also pay attention to the conversation. And I was like, man, that's a very clever way to do it because they showed character in the sense of how he turned away. The woman turned him away. And then also it was funny during the scene. So anyway, that was episode one.
I love that shit. I do that all the time. There's a scene as you're pitching that, there's a scene that came to my head of something I wrote recently where two characters are meeting each other for the first time. And there's a lot of sort of exposition set up to their meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I put them in a fight pit, like a fight club type scenario.
Yeah.
Which works with the movie. But that's where I put them to have this conversation so that we can have this bonkers fight in the background and, like, weird people walking behind them while they're having this conversation. Because it really helps to look for the audience to, like, look at other things while they're listening to, this heavy two-person conversation.
Yeah.
I think that's great. Karaoke is great. That's a great idea as well.
Yeah.
I think we're heading towards a whole topic about exposition dropping.
I think so, too. All right. Main topic.
We're talking about style in screenplay and in screenplays. And this came up because of our script club that we had where we had some writers talking about choices that Chris Sparling made in Burn Night, which was the script that we read, that recently sold to Amazon. And the questions that were coming up, I think surprised Josh and I, because we do what Chris Sparling does a lot. And that is very much not what is taught to screenwriters.
Yes.
Both in books and at school and on Twitter and random things that people will tell you are okay and not okay. Like, the rules of screenwriting are so out there and people are listening to them that Josh and I sort of forgot that those rules existed. Mm-hmm. And so we've been writing just sort of the way that, and, like, in the style that we're going to talk about today. And some of the writers in the script club were pointing out that, like, Are you allowed to do that? Is that okay? Does that make any sense? And so we just wanted to talk about this whole concept where I think a lot of rules tell us, and they're old rules that don't really apply anymore, that scripts are just blueprints to making a movie. You don't matter. You are there to just like outline what the movie is and let people who are more creative than you decide how to execute things. That has sort of been, I remember that's what I was taught when I was in getting my MFA at Boston University. And that no longer applies. I think the best scripts, including this Chris Barling script, have a style, a tone, a voice. They sort of go beyond just what the camera sees when they're describing things. And so Josh and I wanted to get into examples both from the Burn Night Chris Barling script and from our own stuff and from other scripts where writers are doing this and talk about why that's okay, why it works, and why you can throw out the rules.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was important to talk about.
It comes up a lot. It is really interesting because when we're coming up, I know I read so many books about screenwriting, and they all do tell you this.
Yeah.
That basically get out of the way and just write the script. Don't put yourself in there. Don't splash, because that's like splashing your ego into it. And it makes it harder to adapt, you know, for the director to get in there and to adapt it into something. And also it's impractical to write things that the camera cannot see. And that is such a film school thing to say. I absolutely remember hearing that. I can like visualize being in the classroom and hearing that instruction. And it's just not true.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start with an example from Burn Night.
Let's do it.
Again, by Chris Barling, where the scene, the setup of the scene is that Tim, who's this dad, who is kind of holding on too tightly to his son because basically the concept of Burn Night is that it's the Purge, but with dragons. They come up once every year. Nobody knows what date it's going to be, and they just burn whole cities to the ground. And it's unknown what city they'll land on, etc. So you just kind of always have to prepare. So our lead, Tim, the dad, kind of holds on too tightly to his family because he's afraid for their life. And he's has this conversation with his teenage son, who, of course, is, you know, he's a teenager. So he's starting to feel like, I don't like this, the sort of tight grip my dad has on me and my life. And so they're having this conversation. At the end of the scene, Chris writes a long beat as Tim considers saying more, but he doesn't know how to connect with his son anymore. So he leaves. And this was a line, two lines, I guess, two sentences that we talked a lot about in Script Club, because the question came up of, is this right? Like, can you write this way? Because can the camera portray this? A long beat as Tim considers saying more, but he doesn't know how to connect with his son anymore. And that's the piece. He doesn't know how to connect with his son anymore. How do you shoot that? Right? Like, how do you shoot? He doesn't know how to connect with his son anymore. You should just leave that out, because let the director and the actor kind of figure that out.
Yeah.
So, Josh, discuss.
Well, here's the thing. I think that any screenplay at this stage, if you're writing a spec, it's a tool to sell, and it is a tool to get people engaged, and it is something that is going to change 500,000 times, and it is just something that you can show somebody, and ideally they read it and they're like, God dang, that was a lot of fun. And you understand someone's emotion through in chunks of, you know, in a paragraph, and you can explain more than you want, because at this stage and at this phase, not even at this phase, in general, I think, first of all, I think screenplay should just be fun in general. Like, if you're writing something
like a fun read,
a fun read, where, of course, I'm not talking about Lincoln or like some heavy, you know, script that is just going to be heavy. But even there, I'm sure there's certain examples that you can use. But I guess the way I look at it is, like, nothing is final and it'll change. And if you get people to have a better time reading a page, great. Like, it's not like, it's not abused, definitely in this script. I think if you can abuse it, you can overdo it, which I've done before, and I've been told I've done it before. So that's kind of my thought. Like, that's my gut reaction. Do you disagree?
There's definitely There's definitely an element of just make the read good.
Yes.
Just make it really engaging, like Josh is talking about. But then there's also a creative element, which technically the camera cannot shoot. He doesn't know how to connect with his son anymore. However, you absolutely can shoot this. And I think this actually tells you so much about the scene. And what I have found in my own work when I start talking to directors and for animation, board artists and editors and actors, they actually really, really appreciate a line like this. Because first of all, it says a long beat. So we know we're taking a second, right? We're going to hold on this scene for a beat. That tells me pacing. Tim considers saying more. Tim can act that out. Whatever actor you get to act that out, John Krasinski, he can act out, I'm about to say something more, but I don't know how to connect with him, my son, anymore. He can act that out 100% because he is a good actor. And it's probably something like he's about to open his mouth, sighs, holds it back, turns, goes for the door, stops at the door, hand on the knob, turns back around. No, decides to keep going. He can act this out 100%. So giving him all of this information is actually really, really important. And not only does it help the read because you are getting into the character's head and you know how it's going, but this is 100% a scene you can see. And I think that's kind of the key. Can you visualize this scene simply by this description? Tim considers saying more, but he doesn't know how to connect with his son anymore, so he leaves. If you say that line or read that line and you can imagine it, so can everybody else. So I think take that as an example. But if you start finding yourself doing this with longer descriptions, notice this is two lines, right? It's not a paragraph of what Tim's internal thinking is, because that feels unshootable.
Right.
This is a moment. And if you can picture that moment when you're reading, then so can, again, the director, the actor, the editor. So I think you're okay. So this is a really good example of what we're talking about.
Another thing, I actually do write out some kind of internalizing at times. I'm stealing this from my manager, Jay-Z. He would always say, we need an emotional check-in. And that emotional check-in doesn't necessarily come from dialogue. And this is actually going to be a perfect segue into another Burn Night example.
Go on.
The smoke alarm sounds from elsewhere in the house. Tim hears the smoke alarm, reacts with a bit of a start, but his concern quickly fades when he realizes it's far from an emergency. He sighs, aware of his reflective overreaction.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah. You know exactly what's going on. He's upset with himself that, maybe not upset, but he's aware that he's overreacting. I feel like maybe that might be an extreme example, but I feel like that is needed in scripts, personally speaking. And you know exactly how that looks.
Yeah, I can imagine. I'm just going to use John Krasinski again.
Yeah.
I can imagine him acting out, right? He like panics because part of the story is that he's holding on to his family too tight. He's trying to make sure they're all taken care of and that the dragons will never get to them. So as soon as he hears an alert, he's like, fuck, I got to get, you know, grab my survival kit. And then, oh, it's just, I think because the oven.
Yeah.
And something's burning in the oven. He's like, oh, okay. God, get yourself together, John.
Is it?
Right? I can see it. And it's a moment. It's not a paragraph of stuff. It's a couple lines of stuff. And I think that's helpful. Particularly in movies like this, and this is a horror movie, where there is a lot of silence and there is a lot of the character needing to internalize fears, reactions, thoughts that they do not say out in dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And so you as the writer do need to carry the reader/actor when they read this through what they're feeling so that they can then translate it onto the screen. And there's no way to do that except to talk about what they're feeling inside. So I don't know how you write these two moments we're talking about. I don't know how you write them as a blueprint. Like, you almost have to get into Tim's head at the end of that scene with his son. You can't just say, Tim hesitates at the door, then leaves. That's a version. It's not as emotional. As an actor, I don't read that and get excited by what that moment is. And easily a director can go in there and just film Tim hesitates at the door and leaves instead of the weightiness of he considers saying more and he doesn't know how to connect with his son anymore. So you want to make sure as a writer that they're getting what that moment is, right? And again, I have found in my own stuff that the more I guide emotionally the director and the editor and the actors, the less work I have to do on the back end.
Yeah. Because
they get what that scene is already.
But it also, honestly, it also helps me when writing to get into that flow and like state of the character. And then it kind of dives into then the dialogue. And like, it just, for me, it's just, it's necessary to keep the flow going and almost momentum. And then you can cut things out, obviously, but I need to do it for that reason as well.
And I think one of the keys when I think about how to sort of teach or advise how to write this way rather than the blueprint version of Tim hesitates then leaves is that this is a more creative way to write scene direction, camera direction. Because if you can imagine the movie in your head and how that's going to play out, and instead of writing to what the camera is doing, you write to the emotion. It's the same thing. You're saying the same thing. You're just saying it in a more engaging way. And I think if you just are able to make that shift in your head of don't follow the camera, follow the character and sort of like how me, the audience, I'm going to experience this moment.
Yeah.
That might help you figure out how to make that transition in your writing.
I love it.
So I'm going to do another one from Burn Night, and then I'm going to get out of Burn Night.
We're just picking apart Burn Night.
Yeah. The writing was quite good. So this scene is Tim has left his son's room, Dylan's room, and he and his wife are getting ready to go to like a family barbecue with friends.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like almost just after the scene we just talked about where Tim fails to connect with his son. So this is the scene. Tim steps outside Dylan's room, musing. Gretchen approaches, fully dressed and brushing her hair. Gretchen says, "Is he ready?" He knows she's asking about Dylan's readiness for the barbecue, but Tim's answer plumbs to a deeper meaning. Tim says, "No." So like, this one is really interesting because the first line is very much like kind of a blueprint. Tim steps outside Dylan's room. Got it. He's musing. Got it. Gretchen approaches him, fully dressed and brushing her hair. All those things, super tangible, not a lot of emotion put on that. But he knows she's talking about Dylan's readiness for the barbecue, but Tim's answer plumbs to a deeper meaning. That's hard. Like, that's not a camera. That's emotion, right? So
that's beautiful.
It's really great. And I can picture that exactly.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting about this is that this is not camera stuff. Like, this line is not directing the camera to do a certain thing. It's actually telling you sort of the context and tone of the whole scene in general.
Yeah.
Right? Because, like, you know she's talking about Dylan's readiness for the barbecue, but Tim's answer plumbs to a deeper meaning. I require context for the scene. I require Tim to have that argument with his son before. And then when I move into this scene, I need the director and the actors to know the scene that they're coming out of, which is Gretchen has no idea that Dylan and Tim had this argument. She's getting her hair done. She's getting ready for something else. So she's asking about that something else. And you can tell because she's brushing her hair. She's fully dressed. She's in a different mode. And when she comes into the scene, that actress, she's going to have a different vibe to her. I'm getting ready vibe. And Tim probably has a more somber vibe because he just came out of Dylan's room and he's sad.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Gretchen, who's all on barbecue, asks, "Is he ready?" We understand through the context of the scene and her acting that she's talking about the thing she's thinking about, which is the barbecue.
Yeah.
Whereas Tim is still mulling over after his son, and therefore he has his answer of, "No, my son is not ready." And we're going to get that 100%. We're going to get that from the scene. But what I love about this example is, no, it is not a camera direction. It is even not like describing specifically like how to act in this moment. It's describing like how we're coming into the scene and what the context and vibe of this whole scene is. And that's also what your job is as a screenwriter, is to set up those feelings within a scene. And I think this is great.
I love it. Should I just do a hard pivot to another?
Hard pivot. Let's take us out of Burn Night.
We're out of Burn Night. And I'm just going to, I didn't realize how long we could have talked about this, but I'm going to go to my guy, Shane Black. And
okay.
I'm going to bring up an example from a movie he wrote in 1986. I know a lot of people are like, "I don't want to hear anything from a script in 1986." But keep in mind, Shane Black was like, I don't know if he started this whole thing, like, but I feel like he popular popularized.
I think so too.
Am I saying that word correctly? Yeah, I think he popularized this style of writing. I think, you know, so
I think so too.
So imagine he's not the top of his game right now. He wrote Lethal Weapon. He wrote whatever came right after Lethal Weapon, and he's just crushing it. So this is from the Monster Squad. And this is the first paragraph. Ever been to Transylvania? Well, even if you haven't, it looks nothing like the creepy, rotting landscape before us. That's because this is Transylvania circa Universal Pictures 1931. He goes on and on and on to, but like, the reason I bring this up is because that just sets the tone. Like, I feel like I know, granted, you know, Shane Black, but like, you know where that's going. And that's why I think this kind of style is so important, as opposed to just diving into like the beautiful qualities of how foggy it might be in Transylvania and the trees and the darkness and this and that. Like this just sets the vibe to me right off the bat.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Everyone out there, if you've not read a Shane Black script, it's worth doing for this exact topic. He's very good at putting himself in the movie, not in a way that's distracting, that you're like, ugh, like this is just Shane Black just stroking his ego on this page. It creates a tone and a feeling that made his movie so specific and good.
Yeah.
It's great.
It is great. But I do feel like he took some swings at certain times where he's in it. Like, granted, he goes a little hard to the paint, but that was a sports expression, by the way. Yeah.
I paused to think about it for a second. It's a cool phrase.
What the hell is he talking about? Anyway, so that's it. I just wanted to bring up Shane Black. And you know what I'm thinking? If people are still resisting this because they don't do it, I just suggest anyone does it. Like, I was just thinking, like, maybe someone hears me say that and how great Shane Black is, but they're like, that's not true. That's not real screenwriting, this and this. I just think you should give it a shot. Just give it a swing. Try to write like this. Put yourself into the script.
Yeah, it's freeing. And also more practical.
More practical.
Okay, I just have one last example. This is something from my own stuff, which is not as exciting, and it's the Shane Black thing you just gave. So, stupid
good,
transition.
Good luck.
It. But another just two line thing. I'll just read it. Jacob definitely doesn't trust this little girl, but her big puppy dog eyes are also hard to resist. That's another one where I think you could just write it as Jacob is hesitant.
Yeah.
Looks at little girl. Little girl is cute.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob changes his mind. I don't care about that. Like, that's like so stilted.
Yeah.
This is clear. Like, I totally get what's going through his mind right now. And I know how to shoot that. And I know what the actor should be doing and the feeling of the moment.
Yeah. I know what those eyes look like.
I might exaggerate the what?
I know what those eyes look like. Like, I know exactly interaction that's happening.
I know now. Yeah. I'm going to exaggerate those eyes a little bit. The way I shoot that might help me exaggerate them, because the puppy dog eyes are clearly so important to him, unable to resist her. So now I know to focus on that. So it actually does tell the director what to do with the camera more than you think it does. And I think that's something we need to let go of, is that the way that we write now a style like this and getting into the character's head is actually just cleverly disguised camera direction.
Yeah.
and context.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. That's all I got.
That's all I got. I feel like we covered it. I feel like this is good. We had to touch on this because it's still a thing.
Yeah. I love this topic. I'm glad we got to talk about this in Script Club and really... Because it made me go, oh, yeah, I don't do what I used to do in film school anymore. Why don't I do that?
Yeah.
And why does it work this way? And it sort of made me self-reflect a lot. And I thought that was great. So I'm really glad that everyone brought this up in our script club. It was cool to talk about.
Same.
Okay. I have a quote of the day that is very applicable to what we're talking about. This comes from an actor who wants the stuff that we've been talking about versus a script that is a bit more bare bones blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I feel I do my best work when it's all there on the page. And I feel that the character is very vivid as I read the script and I'm not having to create stuff and trying to cobble together something. If I have to do that, then I don't entirely trust what I'm doing. Guy Pearce.
Love it.
Please remember to rate and subscribe. Follow us at Act Two Writers for more awesome writing stuff. You can follow me, Tasha, at Story Thursday on Instagram or on Twitter at Tasha 3.0.
I'm Joshua Hallman on Twitter, Josh Hallman on Instagram.
And as always, the Act Two podcast is a production of Act Two, a network and support group for the everyday working screenwriter. This episode was edited by Paul Lundquist.